This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Mr. Howling Wolf, and, So today, I was gonna talk about an old subject that we've talked about a couple of times, and, we're going to be discussing the Hickam, and as I told you, I'd keep you updated, the Hickam contaminated soil issues and how the State Department of Health hazardous and emergency environmental response office has handled this, and I had some great comments that basically I issued indictments on the Senator Inouye and the Governor Abercrombie and other politicians who have brought in the bacon and then let the pig walk through the front room, so to speak, giving no care about the health of the workers at the military base or the soldiers and their families. And we owe them a great debt regardless how much money it is and what have you. So, and a continuation of this, this process of trying to ferret out, and as I told you, a lot of soil went off the aisle, off the base into private properties. And I've been successful now in documenting two more cases. And so anyway, That's what we're going to be discussing. And, you know, some people would say, well, I worship the ground you walk on. Well, I'm now knowing some homeowners and farmers are cursing the ground they walk on because the problem is they receive soil and it has contaminants in it that they had no knowledge. So we're going to take it from there, and I hope to have Mr. Walter Chan, Ph.D., who's dealt with this issue for a while at Kaneohe Marine Base. He attempted to alert us a while back, and they poo-poo that, they being the state here office, and senators and everyone else. They didn't want to hear anything, and they covered it up, beat him back, caused some folks to lose money in business. So we're back again now to talk about HICM and this practice that is occurring and has been authorized. Good morning. Are you there, Walter?
Yeah, I'm here, Carol.
All righty. Thank you for joining me. And if you could, can you give an introduction of yourself and your expertise or your experience and a little bit about the Kaneohe Marine issue, if you would be so kind.
Okay. I'm an occupational safety and health consultant, and I've been in the occupational safety and health arena for about the last 43 years. So I've worked on different construction projects and worked with different industries concerning safety and health. And in the 2000, I started to work with the contractor at the Kaneohe Marine Base to build the 212 residential housing units out there. And it was one of the last projects where the military was actually doing some construction themselves. And so they contracted to a contractor. And during the course of that project, Coradane and Heptachlor and Heptachlor epoxide, which is pesticides that, you know, that was used widely in Hawaii, was uncovered because they dug up the old houses and the foundations for those houses and poured new slabs. Well, the Navy decided that rather than address the contaminated soil, which normally, under the normal specifications, you would take the contaminated soil and remove it from the site and replace it with clean soil. But they apparently they wanted to save some money, and they decided to do this paperwork nightmare, and it's called a human health risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And they take this assessment, and they basically look at what they're going to spread out in terms of contaminated soil, what the limits are. And they decided that because the military people are only there for 6 years rather than 30 years, a lifetime, they could increase the limits.
Mm-hmm.
So they increased it by a factor of 100. And they said, well, the exposure is minimal and everything's okay, so we're going to do that and we save millions of dollars. And it was, I guess the ballpark figures are in about the $3-4 million range. But the problem is, the backyards and the front yards of these housing units is contaminated with these pesticides. And the military families, number one, are not really told. They're told there's pesticides there, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're also told that it's safe. It's there, it's safe, it's no big deal. But the second part of that, though, is they're not informed about what the hazards are, what things they should do to minimize exposure, for example. Now, this human health risk assessment thing, it's supposed to be a scientific study, but it really wasn't. It was a bunch of people getting together, writing a piece of paper that says, because exposure is 6 years and not 30 years, we can increase the risk to these military families and their children by at least 100 times, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. Now, the military families, number one, who did they go to complain if they knew about it anyway? And number two, the housing people could just say, well, if you don't like it, pack up and go live outside and pay higher rents and, you know, those kinds of things. So the military families are caught in the middle. There's mm-hmm. not much they can do about it. And, mm-hmm. and on top of all of that, they don't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, so, one of the things...
This happened in 2006 when we went to the public and mm-hmm. tried to get public interest in there, but we weren't too successful with that.
Right, you met with some resistance. I remember, I think the Hawaii Reporter, Malia Zimmerman, was actively pursuing this with you, and she did print something, but the bigger media, or I shouldn't say the bigger media, if she wrote it, it was good enough, the word got out there. And what were some of the strategies or tactics that you experienced that they committed to keep this, to quash your efforts or bringing public knowledge to this?
Well, the first thing the Navy did was they said the State Department of Health did not have jurisdiction. So they didn't care what the state had to say about it. And they weren't going to listen to anything the state had to say. At that time, the state did not agree that the human health risk assessment was done properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't acceptable. So, but the federal government said, well, the state, you don't have jurisdiction, so we're not even going to get your input. And that was the end of it. I went to the congressional delegation. Every member of the congressional delegation, a number of times, the Star Bulletin did print an article on the front page. I went to the Department of Health, and at the end of the day, the Department of Health said, you know, the Navy is telling me we don't have jurisdiction.
Right.
Of course, I disagree with that. I mean, I also went to EPA. You know, EPA does have jurisdiction, but EPA didn't touch it either.
Mm-hmm. At that time, on the Kaneohe issue.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, the state, you spoke to all congressional and senatorial officers, and did they give you any help?
They wrote letters to the Navy, and basically the letters came back saying, it's okay, it's safe, we already told the military families, and you know, one of the letters, they repeated the fact that the state didn't have jurisdiction.
That one of the senators stated in the Navy. So now, bringing attention for the, highlighting this one specific point. Military tells the state they have no jurisdiction. Now, here recently, I shared with you a document that the state presented to me, because the state somehow, and I haven't found a retraction of the military's position that the state has no jurisdiction, but somehow the state now is actively involved with the military on the base. But I don't see any letter retracting the, what would we call it, the immunization, or the, what is it, with sovereignty that the military is claiming. Somehow they waived that, or did they, or how did the military and the state get involved now with this document? This was the regarding contaminated materials and the human health risk assessment document that I shared with you and you gave comment.
Okay, now, just to clarify, I have never seen a document by the federal government or the state that actually said the state doesn't have jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. This is just the state telling me they didn't have jurisdiction, and so they can't make the Navy do anything.
Right.
In the human health risk assessment that you gave me, that was, and it's not clear, it's prepared by a private company, but it's apparently endorsed by the State Department of Health.
Right.
And this basically addresses the contamination of the Hickam Air Force Base, or the Joint Base housing projects all throughout Hickam.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they did exactly the same thing. They went out and they did this little mathematical manipulation of the numbers, and they said the risk is now acceptable, even though the environmental action levels have now been increased to a factor of over 100.
Mm-hmm.
So what they said is the military families are only there for 6 years, so it's no big deal. The one most important thing, and the thing that got me the most for Kaneohe and now Hickam, is the fact that these human health risk assessments do not adequately address exposure to children. If you go on any of these bases, what you will obviously see is young children. There are young military families, babies, infants, toddlers, really young children. In the first 6 years of their life, exposure to any carcinogens, any cancer-causing agents, will definitely have an impact. So this human health risk assessment, if it's done properly, is supposed to address those risks. And there's actually an executive order that says we don't want to see disproportionate risk to children. But none of these things are addressed at all by the Department of Health or by the Hickam Community Housing Company that is doing Hickam. And what they're doing is just justifying through a mathematical manipulation the contamination of these housing projects. And the people that live there do not know of the risk. And then even if they did know, what could they do about it, which is really not much.
Mm-hmm.
The underlying thing too is now that the state is doing this and they're accepting all of these really poor assessments, what are they doing out at Kapolei or other places where we're building houses in the state?
Mm-hmm.
So has the state addressed this issue, contaminated soils, with the private sector? And up to this point, I haven't seen anything. So I think that, you know, it kind of seems like they're kind of keeping or downplaying everything because the issue is not just military housing. We certainly see how poorly they're addressing the military housing. And so now the question I have now is, what are they doing outside in the community?
Right. Now, you did this letter for us where you went through on behalf of the public, and I really appreciate it. You didn't charge us anything, and I know what it would cost, and I want to thank you openly about that on air and all. But you wrote this response. You looked at that human health risk assessment that they were proposing or whatever they're considering, I should say, and you titled it Failure to Protect Our Military Families. And you said that why has the contractors provided housing that military families must live on in and around contaminated soils? Can you just briefly, I'm going to go through this letter, you can speak to those points.
Yeah, as we go through this whole process, I mean, that is one of the questions. So why are we doing it? If it's contaminated soil, why don't we get rid of it and put clean soil in the front and backyards of these neighborhoods so that our military families have a clean environment to live in? The only possible solution or the only possible answer I come up with is it saves money. They don't want to have to deal with the contaminated soil.
Right.
You got to remember that if they're going to get rid of the contaminated soil, they have to take it to the landfill, and the landfill may not want it.
Right.
Which makes it even more difficult, and it could be more costly.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sake of saving a couple million dollars today, we expose our children, the military family children, tomorrow.
Right. Now, there's another point, too. Why is the state and EPA allowing the contamination of housing projects to be constructed?
You know, I really don't understand why. They certainly have the authority. They certainly have the jurisdiction to do something about it. Other than, I guess there must be some kind of politics or something involved. I've written many letters to the Department of Health in the previous administration, and I never really got a good answer. I don't know why the state and EPA is doing this. Federal EPA, if you remember back when Mayor Lucy Hanneman was fighting with EPA about the sewage treatment plants,
right?
And there was like an $8 million off penalty or something. And the EPA guy gets up on TV and he says his biggest concern is the discharge of chlordane into the harbor.
Right.
Into the ocean, right? Well, when you contaminate the front and backyards of these yards, chlordane is one of the major constituents.
Mm-hmm.
And it lands up in the storm drain and it lands up in the ocean. So why isn't EPA taking a more active interest? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, I have a gentleman on the phone, and we're going to get to him shortly. He's a resident out in Haleiwa, owns property, and he, Walter, did in fact receive some of this, unknowingly receive some of this contaminated soil, and I was able to go out, and he allowed, he took samples, and we submitted that to the labs, and it was simple grab sample, and it came back positive with Dilgen. And so we're now the state is compelled to do their own testing quite naturally. That's what we want them to do because the way they operate, they, meaning the HERE office now, Solid and Hazardous Waste Branch, I want to make the distinguishment, make it clear. They have been upfront, ready to roll, ready to help, ready to protect the public, unbelievably so. While on the other hand, you got magicians working and leading the office, the HERE office, and you can't see both hands at one time. I'm just going to tell you up front, they are simply doing things. It's corrupted, it's wrong, and when people are getting contaminated with soils that are leaving the bases and they wouldn't even tell their own sister agencies, I'm sorry, that's what you call corruption and cover-up. I wished I had a more pleasant word or way to speak about it, but I don't. I'm lost for words, so to speak, because your actions are just unbelievable. But I want to, you hit on a couple points that is key. Why isn't the EPA involved? Now, remember, I asked that you underscore the fact that the state was told by the feds that they have no jurisdiction.
Right. That was in the Cornelius thing.
Right. And the state here office now conveyed the same message to me. And I had met with them and I expressed concerns. This is bogus. You're covering up. You're carrying the banner for Senator Inouye and the other politicians who like big pork. And here's the proof. My allegations were early on that I had deduced, based on what I know with the HERE office and how they operate and how politics put human safety last. And I have an email that was shared with me by a law firm regarding the EPA's involvement. Now, this is an email saying, I'm writing, it was sent out with respect to your request, let me get my paper here, misplaced it. Here's what it's saying. The actual, it was sent out from the DOJ, Marcus Classy, from the DOJ returned the call. He said that Natasha was deployed and is not returning until next year. Natasha is a special agent with the EPA that was investigating this matter at Hickam. I asked him what the status was of the Actus case, and this is who we're talking about, Actus Lindley's. He said they are closing their investigation because the DOH raise the limit for contamination. And, quote, now Actus is in compliance, end quote. They no longer consider it a criminal fraud. He said he believed the limit was raised by the DOH. I asked him to send me a copy. So there's the smoking gun right there. If the federal government told the state government, you don't have any business here, go away, mind your P's and Q's, just go away, go back to the beach or whatever you do, and you were told that by the federal government, the military, but the EPA believes that there is violations and fraud going on, and in turn initiate, and there were three investigators, special agents operating at one time on this thing at a time, one time or another, and they were pulled off with no explanation, and I was able to get this email. What does that tell you, Walter?
It says that the state and and I guess Actus must be in bed together. I looked at their assessment, and it is definitely not a complete assessment. It's really not enough to justify raising the limits at all.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, you know, in the paper I wrote, I gave you this ballpark figure of what it would take for a certain amount of area, and we're looking at, you know, figures like $7 or $8 million. So it's a lot of money. For the contractor.
To remediate or to handle the soil or treat it?
If they did it properly, yeah.
Right. Now, what I've, and looking around in the records now, in my efforts to get records, I've been informed that there is no permit taken out for remediation. While there is a remediation plan submitted, they informed the state that they were not going to initiate it or activate it. So if they took money for remediation then and did no remediation, as the allegations go, then is that fraudulent? I don't know. But I'm hoping to ask those questions. But anyway,
yeah, please, so.
We'll get back to this, and I don't want to keep I have Gordon Saker, Mr. Gordon Saker, on, and he resides in Haleiwa, and he obtained soil and a large amount from a source there at Schofield. Good morning, Gordon. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. Very well, thanks.
Thank you for calling in and sharing with me and the listeners. Could you tell us the basic background on what was occurring here, what took place, and how you came by with the soil?
Look, Okay, well, I was looking for some topsoil for my property so that I could plant a lawn. And I heard about some topsoil that was available from a trucker in Pupukea, an Iwoli trucking. So I called them up, and they told me they did have some soil that was going to be screened topsoil from Schofield. And so I told them I would take at least four loads.
And what was that quantity? Four loads and what quantity? About 25 yards a load?
Well, it was four truckloads full. I ended up getting the first four truckloads. I'm thinking a truckload is about 8 to 10 yards. So I got the first four. Well, when he dropped the first two loads off, it was not screened. It was supposed to be screened topsoil. And it was not screened. There was like bigger bits of concrete and rubble in it, which I wasn't too happy with. But it was cheap. And he said, well, it was supposed to be screened, but there wasn't enough time to screen it. And sorry. So I said, okay, well, I guess I'll screen it myself then, just more work. And I asked him if there was any more available, because I looked at the four loads that he dropped there. And I thought, well, I could use another two. And so he said, yes, there's more available. So he brought another two.
And this occurred about 3 to 4, 5 years ago, or how long ago
was
it?
It was in 2006.
Okay.
So it's quite a while ago.
And you actually spread the dirt over your property, and subsequent to that, you've experienced some illnesses and rashes and whatever, if you care to share a bit?
Right, well, I only just recently put two and two together, but since just after I bought the property, my skin has this weird rash, which is kind of like, seems like a pimple at first, but it's not a conventional pimple. It itches a lot. And then it breaks out into like a little sore, and it takes forever to heal. And any other cut that I might get just doesn't heal. It heals eventually. And I don't really go in the water as much as I used to anymore. In fact, I rarely go in the water now because I work a lot. When I was younger and I surfed, if you cut yourself and you went in the water, things would take a while to heal.
Right.
But I don't have that excuse anymore. And still, so something was up with my skin. I've been going to the doctor for the skin thing. Treated for acne, rosacea, eczema, dry skin, pimples, everything you can imagine. I've been given antibiotics.
And it's not working.
Topical treatments. Nothing worked. I had a doctor tell me one time, well, some people's skin is just messed up and we don't know why. Anyway, but it would come and go. And so now, now that I'm aware that my soil is contaminated, I only learned this about a month ago. For sure. Well, I actually had a suspicion after I got the soil. I heard that the soil that came from Schofield could be contaminated. But I'd already spread two loads on my property, and I heard that it may be contaminated. I pushed the rest of it to the side and just left it. And it's been there ever since.
And
I actually reported it to the state in 2006. Talked to a lady there named Brigitte who documented it. And I guess they were busy at the time. I was busy. And she said she would contact me back. And when I talked to her recently, she said that back then she tried to reach me and they couldn't reach me. And I think I lost my cell phone for quite a while and got a backup number back then. That's happened to me a few times in the last few years. So it could have been when they were trying to reach me. Anyway, they couldn't get a hold of me back then. And so it just sat until recently when my number was found and somebody contacted me and alerted me that the soil may be contaminated, and so I took some of the samples and we did some tests, and sure enough, we found some dildrin.
Yeah. So now the listeners may not know this. You have a young daughter or young child living there, and who used to play in the soil and play around, and then you have, you're expecting a child, your family. Where does that leave you now? Nervous as heck, I guess.
Well, since I found out that now it is really contaminated, I've actually been shaking ever since. Because I wasn't sure. Now I'm like, I'm very nervous.
Yeah.
I called the state again, and I talked to the lady that tried to contact me a long time ago. They were very responsive. She gave me the name of the head of the toxicity department. I called her. They sent a team out to my house. They looked at the whole thing, they evaluated it. Then the next week they sent a team of about six or seven professionals to grid out my property and then do a very thorough soil analysis and take samples.
And
so the state is very concerned as well.
Yeah, and so we're now waiting for their test results.
So we're waiting for their test results, but I already have test results that show poison.
Yeah, well, we do, and I will get you the hard copy of that. And again, just I share this story and ask you to come on. So I know there are others that receive soil out there. Don't be shy. I know it's not your fault, listeners. If you've received soil from these areas, Schofield, Hickam, Aliamanu, don't hesitate to call me at 782-6627 or my email at Carol, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, at carolcox.com. This is serious business, folks. And Gordon, I appreciate, and the reason the state now is coming out there, remember, they are the ones who condone this loosely operated practice. And so as a result, because you were cooperative with me, getting that sample, they then get in a panic mode because it's not really to care about you so much. It's to cover their butts and their tracks. That's the operating mode of the HERE office. They don't put people first. They put the senator and the Congressman Abercrombie's wishes and the other congressman's wishes first, and the money and their jobs first, then they put you and I last, only until we bite you know what. And that's what you're seeing. And I hope that every listener out there that have received soil from these sources, please call. Let's bring this thing to closure. Let's protect the people. And then we owe it to the military people. We're working our way back upstream, so to speak. If they're going to expose the soldiers and their families at Hickam, we're going to work it backwards. And at the end of the day, the soldiers will be afforded protection, and we're going to hopefully ask the EPA, because the EPA knows that the state can't issue rules to circumvent or weaken federal law. They can't do it.
Hey, Carol?
Yes?
The other issue is the private sector. I mean, this is not a problem only for the military. Apparently, it seems to be a bigger problem all over the state, and you know, we need to know how Department of Health is going to address it all.
And that's right. So, Gordon, thank you, and then I will get you the actual hard copy of that, and we'll just hold our cards close to our chest and see what the state comes up with now with their samples.
Thank you, Carol. I appreciate what you're doing.
All righty. Thank you, and I appreciate your cooperation, your help, and it's going to go a long way, and we're going to see some solutions here and some relief.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Aloha.
Great day. Aloha.
All righty. But again, Walter, as you've alleged way back, it was too loose for the goose, and they didn't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg over there by clamping down and keeping the EALs as they were. Instead, they don't have jurisdiction, but now they're they have convened with the very people that told them they don't want to hear anything they say, they have no jurisdiction, and now they're using the state as an operative to collaborate and conspire against the people with this lowering of the raising of the EALs. While it doesn't clean up anything, it does not clean up one single thing. It just simply raises the levels, and they tell that it's safe.
Right.
So you back to this letter that you wrote again. You said if the exposure to the workers created illnesses, what is the impact of exposure to the residents, especially the children? And I might add, there was an individual who was sickened, in effect, that worked there for an electrical company that gotten sick, and actors settled out of court with him. So if you could speak to that number three question, the statement.
Yeah, and that was just that one worker that we know about. There apparently, we heard that there were other workers that did get sick while they were working on a construction project. And, you know, the contractor would not address the issue of chordane and dieldrin and some of the other pesticides that was in the soil. But if we had, and this is like, you know, in Gordon's case as well, some people will react to these pesticides stronger than others, as, you know, in any exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But the big key question is, we have children, we have babies, and we have expectant mothers. And one of the problems with these pesticides is, once they get in your body, they will tend to concentrate itself in breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
So expectant mothers or recently given birth mothers are really susceptible to these kinds of things. None of these issues are addressed in the Human Health Risk Assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, we're talking about exposure to workers. We know it causes some effects to some of the workers. And these are adults. The big question is, right, how come we did not address what the exposure would do to children? And
right. Now, the Human Health Risk Assessment and this document that they passed to me that they are considering that was done by, they are relying on some hired hand, Tetra Tech, I guess, that was doing the work and the consultant and the science behind it. They are now the state here office is considering this and reviewing it. But they had great input in the document, and they're saying we're going to go to the public later and let the public comment. But if the state is giving guidance and giving suggestions and what have you and helping write this document, why would the public be asked anything when, in fact, you're appealing to the state and it is the state's prescription that the actors and others are following to come to this result that they want? So you ask, why is the document not made public and a public hearing conducted? I ask the same questions. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think the thing that is missing is, at least in Gordon's case, he got his dirt in 2006. We went public in 2006, but I've been talking to the state a year prior to that. So it's not that we didn't know, where the Department of Health didn't know. This issue of the pesticides and the contaminated soil has been a long-standing thing. The state allowed the access to spread this contaminated dirt throughout Hickam, to the Hickam project, and maybe other housing projects as well, as far as we know. To have public hearings and public notice about something they've already done is kind of backwards, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the Human Health Risk Assessment should address, should be made a public document, and the public is given an opportunity to comment and raise their issues.
Mm-hmm.
But that hasn't been done yet, although they're already, for the last several years, they've been raising these limits and allowing these housing areas to be constructed without people knowing that they're exposing their children and themselves to these pesticides.
Mm-hmm. And the major concern is that these pesticides or chemicals can cause or contribute to cancer.
Right. They're classified as probable carcinogens.
Right. And so you ask the HHRA what is missing. The HHRA is a contract and government's methodology to saving money at the expense of the military family. So, and you ask, how is this HHRA approved by the DOH, and how is it acceptable for the military families, who is accountable?
Yeah, that's what we don't know. That's my question, is somehow whoever in the Department of Health is reviewing these and working with them, Throughout that human health risk assessment that was issued by the private sector company, I think it is Tetra Tech, they refer to limits established by the state and documents produced by the state. So the state is actually co-authoring this document.
And then going to give it to us when they feel like to let us give an opinion when we're appealing to the state. Caller, welcome to the show. You have a comment or question? Hello?
This was just Gordon Saker. Sorry, I'd lost you before.
Okay. Okay. All righty. Good. Welcome back. Again, Walter, I'm looking at this and thinking they didn't listen to you. They beat you back. They did everything to orchestrate. But what is more telling is that the HERE office purposely withheld this information from the EPA. Now, imagine three special agents investigating this, and HERE had knowledge that they were investigating, and they didn't inform the EPA special agents that they had lifted the EALs while they were told they had no jurisdiction there. What nonsense.
Yeah. I don't, you know. And I think as a public issue, as an issue for the governor, would be what authority does the Department of Health have to just arbitrarily raise these limits? What is the criteria? Are they using a human health risk assessment that is done properly? Mm-hmm. Or is it just because they're in a good mood today? Or because it's a big company and they don't want to fine them, you know, a big penalty? What is the criteria the Department of Health is using to establish whether or not these risk assessments are acceptable or not, and how much does the public input matter in this in those decisions?
Well, not only did they withhold it from the public, not only did they withhold it from the EPA, they also withheld it from their sister branches within the Hawaii Department of Health. There is other branches, let's say, or divisions, the clean water, clean air, wastewater. You have also the solid and hazardous waste branch. They weren't informed that the EALs were raised until some query by accident. Imagine that. So it all points into cover-up. I wish, you know, if the HERE office, I've made requests for documents, and they're still walking around in circles. And by the way, this HHRA that they spoke about, Walter, that they provided me, I'm told, and I don't see any logic in this, that the one that they forwarded me and the one that you have commented on is flawed with some of the information, and there's some inaccuracies in it. So, but they've not provided me with an actual document to pointing out the inaccuracies in the first document that they are considering. What are you? What conclusions can you draw from that? What could be inaccurate? I would think that this document that they submitted was the facts and nothing but the facts.
Yeah, I think the way this human health risk assessment is written, it's written as a document that is made to justify raising the limits.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a scientific study the way it should be to assess whether or not if we leave the contaminants there, what is the exposure to our children and our adults? What is the impact of this exposure? How are we going to control the exposure? Those kinds of things. None of the real elements of a true human health risk assessment are addressed. It's just a number game that says, if I'm only there for 6 years, instead of me coming down with cancer, the chances of me coming down with cancer is 1 in 1,000,000, but because I'm only there for 6 years, it's 1 in 100,000, so that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, said that's okay. I mean, that's not okay to me.
Well, you raise a good point in the question is that what kind of monitoring is in place that would monitor the families that did come here and leave?
And that, you know, military families, I think, are the most abused group of individuals in the military. When they move from one base to another, they're not told what they're exposed to and from one base to another. But then, at the very least, what rights do they have? And every time I get into this, it baffles me. A military family cannot complain. Who do they complain to? This is enlisted housing.
Yeah.
They're going to complain to their senior officers, or, there is nobody there to help them do mm-hmm. this stuff. They're on their own.
Now, I had a call, and I didn't get any specific names, and you can understand why they didn't want to, but what they shared with me was that at the time, the high-ranking officials at HICM actually intervened and had close relationships with people at ACTUS, because a lot of the people at ACTUS is former military or federal government employees. And so there are other information that alleging that there was discussions as to why is this the Hawaii project costing so much money. That was discussions within ACTUS hierarchy. And so obviously in the emails that I have and documents, ACTUS speaks specifically about cost and just getting it done, so to speak. And, you know, that's where we are here. But you really did us a favor with this. Question 7, how will the HDOH and the EPA ensure protection of the public and the future environment if the EALs are allowed to be changed by an unacceptable HHRA? And you mentioned some of it, but can you give a little bit more detail?
Yeah, if we're going to change if we're going to raise the limits and we think somehow it's an acceptable risk, then let's verify that. Let's do some human monitoring or develop a protocol to decide how are we going to monitor some of these individuals. Can we do air studies inside the houses? Can we do dust samples to see what the buildup of concentrations are in the different homes?
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of monitoring to verify what you thought you assessed in your human health risk assessment is really true. Now, all of these monitoring things take several years. But, you know, if you're saying they're only exposed for 6 years, then over a six-year period, let's study it. Let's make sure that we can assure them that during this last 6 years, the levels they were exposed to was very, very low or way lower than what they thought it would be or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if we find that the levels are higher than what we thought, it will allow us to take immediate corrective action rather than let these people to go on to be exposed after that.
Mm-hmm. Now, civilians are being exposed to this, we know, like Gordon, but there's another situation setting out there off of Valkenburg where I was alerted to supposedly a pile or a load of dirt had been dumped and it was contaminated with chlordane. And I was able to go there and confirm and took pictures of it, and it's sitting just situated near churches and residences and children, and it's just open. The dirt is exposed, and they know that it has chlordane, and it's been sitting there, and it came off of HICM, and I have the test results of that. Not only are they moving it about and placing it in places haphazardly, they are then, when told to clean it up or bring to their attention, the Navy just let it sit there. So, again, where is here? And here had knowledge of this, but has taken zero interest or zero actions because, remember, they don't have jurisdiction on HICM or military bases, only if they're willing to give the favorable rulings and writings and conceal them from their sister agencies. Then they're welcome, but if it's anything that's going to adversely affect the dollar on part of the contractor, the main contractor, the health department is mute.
And if it's true that the state doesn't have jurisdiction, then EPA has jurisdiction. So why isn't EPA doing something?
Right. Well, and I read you that letter because the EPA. So the whole thing is just, it's sick and infested with politics. And while I know I admire Mr. Inouye and all, but hey, nobody's perfect. And I'm gonna tell you, in this situation, there's no perfection in anything. If anything, they have perpetrated the perfect lie on the people. All parties involved, the solid and hazardous waste branch is begging to do their job. But the HERE office is holding them at bay. And I'd ask the listeners out there, if you're concerned and you want to be involved with this, call Governor Abercrombie's office. and tell him today, ask him, or however you want to do it in a kind way when people are screwing you over, however you care to approach him, on behalf of the soldiers and the unsuspecting property owners that have received this assault, call the governor, call Senator Inouye's office and say, let your stranglehold release it. Let justice be done here. People can and will be sickened by this practice, and you need to do something. I ask all of you to do that because it's important. And we're getting the best of the best. I mean, just to give you, Walter Chan is not just Walter Chan, the activist. Walter Chan is a PhD, CSP, CHSP, and a CHST. Now, all those alphabets, Walter, can you give us greater details of what they mean in your credentials?
Well, they're basically, I'm a certified safety professional, I'm a certified healthcare safety professional, and a construction health and safety technician. And those are certifications that I maintained in order for me to do the safety and health consulting work that I do.
Mm-hmm. And I want the public to know we haven't paid you a penny. You're doing this on your own, and we really appreciate it. The gentleman that got sick, and I understand you even participated in helping him, and he released his medical records to me because he, too, is concerned about the grand old cover-up that is occurring in these situations.
Right.
So anything else quickly, Walter or Gordon, before we go? We got about 2 minutes.
Well, I just really, when the state came, they were very concerned and willing to jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I asked them what they were going to do about it, it was like nothing.
Hmm.
I'm the one that's going to have to do something.
Yeah. Well, I think I know a few attorneys that might have a different opinion, but I don't give legal advice. But we'll wait and see.
All right. Well, thank you, Carol.
Hey,
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And we'll be getting that document to you, and we'll meet this week and get things going, get the ball rolling. And, Walt, anything right quick?
Carol, I received an email in 2006 from a lady out in California, and I just want to read a couple sentences.
Go for it.
This was in 1948 to 1950. For 2 years, she was at Kaneohe Marine Base. And she said the military furnished housing at Kaneohe. The housing was called Termite Village. And during these years, they spread DDT throughout the area. They sprayed it, you know, from a Jeep and all kinds of stuff. And she's saying, my entire family, including myself, developed tumors and cancer. I had 2 children. I lost one with cancer years later. I lost my husband from toxic exposure, mercury and DDT combined, colon cancer, severe nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a family that was exposed for only 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
6 years, 2 years. And years later, she's telling us that, you know, if there's anything she can do to help prevent building contaminated homes, that she wants to help.
Can you forward me that email? I would like to get her on the show or share and bring you back in, because I'm not going to let this go. And as I've explained to the listeners, this is an entertainment effort. So I'm trying to get the word out and make a difference. So I apologize if we're repetitive, and it may seem that it's repetitive, but the state isn't getting it. The EPA dropped the ball. They know darn well if there's crime going on and illegal activities going on and the public is exposed, regardless of the technicalities, they still should. The fact is, people are going to be sickened or can be sickened by this, regardless of the politics, right? And the fake science. So anyway, Gordon Walter, thank you, and we'll be talking again and get you on air, and I hope the listeners appreciate this and will participate.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. Yeah. I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before. No, no. Yeah. I just want to tell you right now that I believe, I really do believe that something's got a hold on me, yeah.
Oh, I feel it.
Oh, something's got a hold on me right now, child.
Oh, I must feel it.
Let me tell you now, I've got a feeling. I feel so strange. Everything about me seems to
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I had to play that in its entirety, a smoking gun. We have a smoking gun here, folks. We got samples that show chemicals in soil. We got documents to show the government covered it up. We got documents to show people got sick. I think that song was written for this occasion, or I'm stretching it, but nonetheless, we're sitting pretty good now, folks. It's rare, and you know, for things to fall in place, but I guess things are lining up, and truth is out there. And the nice part about it is that there are people within government willing to tell the truth and do what's right, and there are citizens who's willing to stand up and fight, and there are people like Walter Chan who takes the entire investment of a career in education, and he speaks up on your behalf and all. I can't see any failure in this one. I think I sense the winds of change coming here. Believe me, I really do. And I'm thinking that we're going to get the attention of the big boys and the guys that bring in the pork, you know. Pork may smell good while it's cooking, but it's tough, and it stinks when it's trampling over you and messing up and rooting around and what have you. It's bad. And Senator Inouye, you gotta change it. You gotta stand back and say, do what's right for the people. Governor Abercrombie, you gotta look back and look over your shoulder to your friends who you helped bring in this Actus Lindley's and tell them, do what's right by the people. By the way, it is our military who's directly affected by this, and we don't care about them. We care more about the Raptor, the jets out there, and make sure that they're washed every day and covered to make sure the glass on them don't get sun-baked or what have you, or the paint, whatever they want and put in shelters. But the people that keep them and maintain them and their families, we don't care about them. As long as they're able to ship them off and shoot them, you're happy. Well, we got to change that frame of mind. And 524-1080 is the number I'd like to hear from you. And this is going to be a loose hour. And as you say, and you see, loose lips as well. And I don't intend to sink any ships, but I intend to at least bring some of this to open. And any subject you want to talk about, it's fine with me. I'm going to leave this rainy day open, and whatever's aching or bothering you, and feel free to call 524-1080. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Carol. This is Mike.
Oh, good morning. I recognize the southern accent.
yeah, right. Congratulations. Another job well done.
Well, thank you.
Hopefully somebody will pay attention to federal government. You know, I mean, after all, we're still living on an emergency declaration.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you were on the show with me when we disclosed that, uncovered that. And do you think, just, I didn't plan on asking this or anything, but do you think it, not only was it the military munitions that they were wanting to clean up, it was also to protect the developer over there on, and the military on Hickam and other military bases?
I'm not too sure about that, but, you know, I wouldn't doubt it after, you know, we checked into it more and more and found out that, you know, you can build a ski lodge on Mauna Kea without even having to ask the Land Use Commission or anyone else.
That's right.
Yeah, this is a prime example, once again, of government screwing up.
Yep, and screwing us.
Yeah, that in the process, you know.
collateral damage.
Which actually gets me to the point why I was calling is traffic. I was reading something about Birmingham, Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama, the city is in bankruptcy, the biggest municipal bankruptcy that ever happened in the U.S. I think it's like $4 billion worth of bankruptcy. So all services, you know, fire department, everything is at a minimum. Jail facilities, you know, I was reading, they're sleeping on the ground. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that because they thought they needed to upgrade the sewer system to the tune of $4 billion. And supposedly the feds were right there with the money. We're going to support them. We're going to finance. Everything is in place. Let's not worry about it. Let's start building. So they squandered away all the initial money, and then they were left with nothing. It sounds to me like my whale system over here. let's just start building. Let's not worry about it. Let's get the posts up. Let's build those concrete pillars.
Mm-hmm.
The rest will just follow.
Right.
Well, I haven't heard one word yet, actually, in form of a firm commitment that the feds actually will come up with the money.
Mm-hmm. And is it just that on Sundays now lately, it's the new revelations coming about costs? I think in the paper today, I see another revelation that it might be more costly. It was understated or overstated. I don't know. Did you see that article?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me because everything always was understated.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, it has to come in with more.
And
I mean, even that beautification on Nimitz.
Right.
You know, $5 million for 5 miles? Something like
that. $5 million for 5 miles and you're still stuck in traffic on Nimitz. Well, at least you can stare at the trees now.
That's right. But you still can't take a left turn into Young or wherever you want to go because the lane is too short.
Mm-hmm.
People just won't pull forward. They leave 2 car lengths between themselves, which basically now puts you in another cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically... Why doesn't Hawaii or Honolulu or somewhere over here go and does a traffic pattern study?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe that's the solution.
Well, you know, they had Professor Panos Prevedoris willing to give the free advice and was on the task force or the committee, whatever it was. And because they wanted to hook and crook and steal from the public and give to their friends, they didn't listen to him and still won't listen to him. And I have to give more credit to him and look to his statements than what we've been told here recently. Well, this nothing to do with traffic per se, but, you know, did you see yesterday's paper? There was a revelation through that Doug Chen. There was a claim that the disclosure that the mayor did not know about the recent financial, the waiver or whatever it was that they signed. How is it that the mayor would be willing to tell the public that his people, his underlings, were acting on their behalf? Does he not know that there's a liability, that the public might say, this is a perfect example that all you were doing was serving as a tourist, going abroad, and here your own staff wouldn't tell you what they're doing?
Well, that's kind of his style.
Yeah.
I was his style as a prosecutor, and I guess it's his style as a mayor.
Yeah. But I think if one defining moment or action or comment is that one, I think, based on what I saw in that, and these were just my natural reactions, no political reaction, that Peter Carlisle is out of the race. He willing to openly admit that he is so cavalier and so loose with his management skills, or though if he has any, that he would go abroad and then something as major as this, they didn't tell him. First of all, it's questionable that they didn't inform anybody. And then now they didn't inform him. So what's his administrative policies? What is he about? So I think that is... The final statement in his political career. I don't believe that he even returned to the city prosecutor's office because he's demonstrated that he is aloof. He reminded me of the prince that they talk about here, the local prince at one time. Someone said he was aloof. And so this is consistent with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, that was his style as a prosecutor. The trials that he did, he was always loose on the facts and cavalier
mm-hmm.
about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Pandering to the media, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And he relied on his deputies to actually notice stuff.
Right. And so, then the types of cases that he handled, I mean, you know, the unfortunate case of involving the baby thrown from the freeway, he took care of that. I mean, how can you lose that? And in other cases. So I'm frightened to even know that he would return an attempt or consider. I personally believe that it would be the proper and the most respectable thing based on his behavior and what has developed. He wedded himself with the rail, and he didn't tell us, by the way. And this is consistent with his policies and practices now. So I think the most honorable thing would be for Peter Carlisle to just step down and leave. Just let us alone. Let us manage our own affairs, especially if we have to learn weeks and months later what action he's taken.
No, I don't think he's going to just step down.
Yeah, but, you know, but it's just a thought, you know, and I'm a open thinker, so to speak. But anyway, the traffic, again, this speaks to his management skills. I mean, someone said $7 million set aside for the roads. I haven't seen $7 spent on the roads where I live.
Well, some of the worst examples, basically. For instance, if you take Ward Avenue, you know, you're coming up Ward, you cross Kapiolani, especially at rush hour time, you have three lanes going towards King Street, and then all of a sudden, the third lane, the one closest to Blaisdell, comes to a grinding halt. Mm-hmm. Because someone decided they want to go to that athletic club, and parking starts at 5:30. So they just stop there already at 5:15, sit in the car in the event that a police officer shows up, and just block traffic. Or even if it's 5:30 and they're legally allowed to park. So then we have a third lane that needs to merge over into two lanes that are already struggling to go past King Street. I mean, it just makes no sense. I mean, I'm not aware of any metropolitan area. And let's call it what it is. I mean, you know, it might not be much of a metropolitan or cosmopolitan town, but the point is there's a lot of people here that allows on-street parking at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes no sense. It's just a traffic congestion. For instance, when all the people are allowed to go to town so that they're on work on time, can clock in on time, for instance, on Veritania, when you're coming around where your main society is, when you're coming around the bend, there's absolutely no parking. Traffic flows, and it continues even after you cross University. In the evening, when it's not important anymore for the, you know, the companies to get their workers in on time, parking is allowed. And traffic always comes to a grinding halt. You throw in a bus, and you're already asking for a traffic jam.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, past University. Parking, you don't have all the lanes. If they were to open up all the lanes so that traffic could flow, which they do around Christmas time, there's no on-street parking allowed on Kapiolani, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So they're aware of it. Why don't you study this somewhere?
Right.
You know, change the flow of traffic. Oh, no. The people in Hawaii are too stupid. We couldn't reverse traffic on the street. We're asking for fatalities.
Right.
Well, you know what? I submit that the people in Hawaii are not stupid. I believe they're smart. I believe they can adopt.
Oh, yeah, they will. Let's see if a caller here. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Oh, yeah. Aloha, Carol.
Good morning. How are you?
Sorry. I know you're talking about traffic right now. I heard you earlier. I'm over in Waimanalo, and my reception is terrible.
Well, they're working on that. They put in a new transmitter and, transformer.
It's been like this for a couple of months anyway.
They're working on it.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that's what they're, yeah. Anyway, I wanted to mention, earlier you were talking about contaminated soils, yeah?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, what would be the most adequate or convenient way of covering up contaminated farmlands, yeah? Namely on the Everplain?
Mm-hmm.
Basically would be to build houses on it, yeah?
Okay.
And it seems to be the way they've been pushing this, the rail and everything, yeah? The whole Pili, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first time in history, these people are doing all kinds of things, even avoiding existing ordinances and debt on the debt limitations, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be that it's overwhelming what they're trying to do to get this rail thing through, and the rail thing is not for traffic purposes. It's for the building of the second cities, yeah?
Right.
Out there. Where all this idled farmland is, yeah? Which could possibly be a toxic dump.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering about it. Maybe you can have some of you callers that have more information on it or do a little bit more research myself.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, thank you. All right. Yeah, any questions or comments? We'll play scatter today, but Mike, go ahead, and if you on your 524-1080 is the number, 524-1080.
Actually, I don't think they're trying to build the rail for the Second City. I think they're building it for Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
Shuttle their visitors from Waikiki faster to Kohina.
Yeah, and from the airport, they can get off the airport and hop right on and head straight back to Disneyland. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me, and this is, it's related to the rail, but the rail scares me big time. But what's more frightening is that the guy who finagled his way in to get this, Mufi Hanneman, is now running for Congress. That's the most frightening thought. I would rather see a train coming downhill with no one at the controls than to know that he's going to Congress, personally. And I base it on the fact that if we need an example of his ability and his sincerity and his character, it would be the train. I don't think anybody should have a hair-scratching moment or a head-scratching second or a moment to think who they should vote for. You vote for who you want to, but the most fearful thing that I have sickens me to think that he even had the tenacity to put his name on the list when he knows all this nonsense is going on and behavior, questionable behavior relating to the rail. That's frightening. You know, so I have that feeling that someone has tied me to the rail, and I see the train coming. That's how sickening this feeling is, that we as a people and the unions supporting this dude, when in fact everything that's coming out, revelation after revelation, that he is failing and has failed, hook and crook. So, anyway, on the traffic, why and I, for example, you sit out there at a traffic light, and You can see there's no traffic moving. The light, the way they got it timed, nobody's turning right, nobody's turning left. They just sits there for about 45, 50 seconds or a minute, maybe longer. And no traffic moves. Can you believe that? The way they got the traffic light set up. So like you're saying, it's something is wrong, and they're always building and digging out there.
Well, if they wanted to do something for Wine Eye, they should have build the rail from Waianae, so, you know, because sometimes I'm coming from that side and I see how it is when they're driving back into, my God, it's just, you know, right there at the power facility, it starts, it's just bumper to bumper. I can't believe that no one gets angry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe I don't know about the mountains out there, but why couldn't they just have the rail go underground and come out in certain spots and have parking there? I mean, the whole world has new users, trains, and tunnels, unless there's some sacred thing I'm not aware of, but the mountain, you know, can't be tunneled for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But the rail would make perfect sense to come from that side of the island, and maybe another rail from the other side, around on the inside, so that the coastline can be beautiful and is not congested. You know, if the rail doesn't do anything about congestion, then we should do something about the congestion, which is study the traffic pattern. But there was a couple of months ago, I had to drop my kid off at Turtle Bay for some function, and it's ridiculous. I mean, there is no tourism experience worthwhile. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's diminishing everything. I mean, being stuck in that traffic just diminishes the experience. It does nothing to add to the beauty of the islands, and it doesn't do anything, that congestion, to add to, you know, to experiencing a vacation in Hawaii. I mean, people just are fed up. I ran into a couple at a gas station. They were from Texas. His comment was, there's just too many cars on the road. It is just crazy.
And we should think about this the other alternatives, making a better bus system, light rail or whatever that was. I don't know all the details. But something should be done to offset the impact of traffic on the islands completely. But, you know, staring at the back of a car from here to Haleiwa is not a good experience for tourists. And that's what happened. And now, you know, and you don't dare go to Haleiwa and leave and go toward Waimea. At some times, you might as well walk, you know? So
actually, people on bicycles were faster than us.
Yeah.
And in certain spots, people walking were faster. I just, you know, I haven't been to that side in a long, long time, but 20, 25 years ago, it was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I was just sitting there and thinking, in traffic, why is it that we don't have another lane or a bus lane or small road in on the inside? You know, behind the houses, between the mountains and the houses,
mm-hmm.
out of view from the ocean so that the tourists can, you know, enjoy the ocean view and us locals are cruising in the back on roads that are less congested.
Right.
You know, there is money to be spent. You can spend $5 billion on that.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely will, you know, give us a bit of bigger bang for our buck than a rail system that, who's going to use it? You're going to be standing up for 20 miles? I'm not.
Yeah, and who's going to get the seats if it starts from Colina side or that side over there, right? East or whatever. Wherever it starts from, people going to, they're going downtown and you have a few seats. Guess who's going to get the seats?
Yeah. And they're going to, you know, it's one thing to stand up and offer a seat to your elderly if you're going, you know, a certain distance, but if you know you're in for a 20-mile ride, and I don't know how many stops they plan on doing, but what is it, a 3-hour ride? What actually is the estimated time of the ride? Does anybody know?
Yeah, you got me. They're not telling us the details. Let's take this other call. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, just a comment from the last caller. When you're driving, you shouldn't be looking at the view and looking at the ocean. You should be watching the road and the other cars. That's my only comment. Is I didn't like that particular statement. Drive and looking at the view and the mountains and the ocean. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is build cars with no windows now and just...
I agree with them. If you're driving, you should concentrate on driving and concentrate on the road. But the thing is, we're not driving. We're standing still.
Right.
We're moving at maybe a mile at the most.
Yeah, but...
Like I said, pedestrians walk faster than traffic flow.
Yeah. But if you're keeping your eye on the road, I understand what the caller's saying, but, you know...
I agree with him wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I do too, but how do you tell someone they shouldn't be looking out at the scenery? That's why they call them scenic tours. That's why other states promote. Get on the highway and drive and see the scenic tour. You know, look at the vista points and all of that.
Well, that's why they call them scenic routes. But the thing with the scenic routes is it allows you to drive at a speed limit that has been established, and you can still look and observe the countryside.
Right.
However, in our traffic, you've got to concentrate on hitting the brake light the brakes at any minute because someone else will slam on the brakes and you're going, you know, there's no scenic route in
that. Right.
It's just the truck.
Caller, you got a question or comment?
Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, good morning. I'm concerned about the rail. You know, I'm a disabled person, and I went to thing that the city had in 2010, I think it was September, at the Blaisdell.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the engineers and the design team that for the rail, and they were talking to the disabled about how they're going to make ADA compliant. And we broke up into small little groups, and then we voiced our opinion what they should do for the ADA
mm-hmm.
Disabled people. My question to them was, if the rail car gets stalled, you know, the power goes out or there's a natural disaster or something, how would you get their rail car back, the people off the rail? Because it's, you know, so many feet high. And they say, oh, we have backup generators. We can bring them back to the nearest station and blah, blah, blah. I say, well, if there's an earthquake 7.8 or higher and it cracks the rail, you know, the steel rail or whatever, how are you going to get those people off? He couldn't answer my question on that one. Because, you know, you got people that can't get off of there. Another thing is they're going to make 21 stations. And in our group, I told them before they make the next 20 stations, have us as disabled consumers take a look at their complying with the ADA before they start building the next 20. You say, well, that's a good idea because, you know, you make one mistake and keep making more, then you have to fix it later on. It's going to cost more money and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do build a rail, I hope they make that. And our concern was when you come to a station and you slow down and you're in a wheelchair, it's not strapped down now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it safe for that person that won't be impacted when it stops at the station? Or they gradually come to the station and slow down. We put a big gulp 7-Eleven cup on the rail floor, and we had it tested. Nothing was dripping after they made the speed come down towards the rail station and whatnot. So
mm.
I don't know how true it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, concerning about the chlorine and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
I did call another radio station, and Gene Ward was on it.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to him on Tuesday last week and asked about the chlorine issue about military bases and how the contractor's been taking off and dumping it illegally. And he said, "Oh, I don't think there's no problem because they have people that should be having the permits and watching them." And he said, "Why did you ask this question?" And I said, "Well, I heard it on a Carol Cox show, and the person that was I think it was a Mike Buck show, he cut me off.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like you, Carol."
Well, that's okay. I mean,
and then I called the week before. I talked to Shots and on the radio and. He said get back to him, but he hasn't even responded back to me through email.
Yeah. Well, you know, if that's their radio show and their show must go, and no problem. Keep calling here. You'll hear the truth, and we'll never cut you off.
Maybe you should go national.
Let's take care of our little problems here first, and then, as I say, this isn't entertainment. This is I'm trying to give the people a voice.
Right.
And we're not going to cut you off. If you notice when other people call and talk about other stations, hey, help yourself, unless they're being foul-mouthed about that person.
Right.
But we're not in that business, and I'm not here to entertain you. So.
Well, I appreciate all you do, Carol.
All righty. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Aloha. Anyway, Mike, go ahead. You have any comments? Better heard. It sounds like they're ringing off the hook.
Yeah, I just go.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning. You know, we had a concern. I have a neighbor that, and I know this is probably totally off topic, but she did a layaway up in Kmart in early February. They deducted the money from her checking, but when she goes back up there, they're saying she owes more than less, and so they called the manager. They could see it. They don't know why the transaction didn't go through. They said they were going to take care of it. We went back up there again yesterday, and the transaction still isn't posted. They don't know why, but they've taken the money from her. And so we were just concerned because the lady behind her also said she seemed to be experiencing the same problem. So we don't know what is the route to take on that when, you know, $30 is a big amount to her. You know, she's a senior citizen. And, you know, it's just scary that, you know, here they can take money straight from your checking. It's supposed to go towards her layaway, and yet there's no accountability where the money went. And you know, she's out $30. They're saying she still owes more and that they were going to fix it. Now she goes back up there 2 weeks later, and the problem still hasn't been fixed, and the money is still not there.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, you're an attorney. You have any suggestions or any comment?
I think, Kevin, you achieve more by calling him and asking him than a lawyer could in court.
Mm.
I think you're more effective when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Ask him. Invite him to elaborate on it.
Oh, okay. Well, the caller can send me an email at carol@carolcox.com and get some contact information. Yeah, well, anyway, this traffic thing is, it's sometimes it's smooth, and even Saturdays get kind of congested, especially on the freeways, and then you look and, well, maybe there's a major accident. No accident. I don't understand if maybe the carrying capacity that the roads are designed for just has been exceeded or what. Because you can only get so many cars at a certain speed braking and changing lanes anyway on a certain volume or quantity of highway, I guess. But it just seemed to be predictable, especially around that Shafter area. Once you get leave the hospital up there. Once you come past Tripler, expect some braking and some stopping from there all the way up to Kinau. And past that, actually. And you don't, is it just too much feeding in or what have you?
Right. And it's, I mean, I don't understand why we do not do something about what is existing, why we don't have any draconian measures. I mean, I know the car dealerships are a powerful lobby. And people don't want to be told how many cars per household, but we just keep adding and adding and adding. And the two callers ago, I believe, I had an interesting point when it comes to the rail system and handicapped people, and you mentioned earthquakes. Well, if we have any natural disaster, what's the first thing they do? They keep you off limits. So there's only one road, pretty much, that's consistently going through, and it was just, there's the freeway system. I mean, are there any plans? Has anybody ever looked at this? Why not just do some urban planning that allows for corridors that can move massive amounts of cars? And yes, maybe we have to build new roads. But this elevated rail system is going to bulldoze right through neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, why not spend money that's available on road improvements or building corridors?
Mm-hmm.
And then build them according to modern ways with having barriers that keep the sound away.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was over at on Mehiula in Mililani and saw the traffic stopped, and ahead was a city truck, or I guess it's city or state, one of the agencies, and they had coal plant, and they were shoveling it off the truck and putting it in the potholes and then tapping it down with a shovel. And here comes a car and rolls up on some of the spots they've poked it and patted it down and collects a chunk of it because it's sticky, right? It sticks to the wheel and it pulls out a chunk and there goes a pothole, starts all over again. You would think they could do something better than that, right? And then they were tapping it down with the feet, but just tapping it down with a shovel. And I'm thinking, there, if this is what we do to make, solve the problems, there will never be a solution.
Yeah, and a little bit more of driver's education. I mean, when you're standing on the side of the street and looking at some of those, or maybe you're in traffic and you look at some of the, you know, I know we like to drive with Aloha, but Aloha, I don't understand how Aloha includes crossing five lanes of solid traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why does a person insist on stopping the entire traffic flow so that they can just go into the far left lane?
Mm-hmm.
Why not just show some Aloha and drive around the block?
Right?
I mean, it's sometimes I just scratch my head when I'm looking at these. I mean, when did they get a driver's license?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they don't even go to speed limit. I mean, if the speed limit is 25 miles, why are we going 10 miles if there's no other handicap or impediment on the road? I mean, just go.
Yeah, drivers, funny thing is if you're driving and it's bumper to bumper and immediately a space come, the driver in the right lane or whatever lane next to you will immediately point his car out there, and now that causes braking, a chain reaction of braking, that translates into stoppage. And then that person gets in there, and he's maybe two car lengths ahead of where he was, and then finally he's behind traffic. So it's driver's ed, it's driver's etiquette, it's keeping, you know, just being, I guess, thinking before doing, trying to get that extra inch, I guess.
Right. And another thing, too, is this got to be the only place where I'm looking at. Just think about it. I mean, next time you're sitting in traffic, look at the traffic light ahead of you. It's green, you know, 10, 15 cars, whatever, wherever you see the light, it's green. But no one is moving. Not a single person is moving. I watch the light turn red, and all of a sudden the whole column moves forward.
I have never figured out how that is possible.
Yep.
You think it's funny I'm making this up, but when you're on Ward, once you pass King Street or other places, you just look at it. You on red, the cars are moving. On green, you stop. P car is another one of those examples.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to figure out the timing of these lights, but it's got to be the only place where you see the people actually moving on red.
Right.
And standing still on green.
Mm-hmm.
There must be some kind of a phenomenon, but I don't have any explanations.
Yeah. Caller, you have a comment or question?
Yes, you know, hey folks.
Hey.
I understand how frustrating, you know, the traffic is, you know, on the west side, but, you know, to choose a transportation mode that's not really going to relieve traffic is irresponsible,
mm-hmm.
like the rail.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you were to ask me a couple of questions why the rail is not going to work, I can give you a couple of plenty. But,
Well, give me one. I've asked the question.
Okay, this is the main reason why I don't think that the rail is going to work. We don't have the population to, you know, really fill the trains up, basically because this island is basically residential homes. If you look at places that has rail, it's a lot of high rises, apartment building, condominiums, and you have all these high rises at every square feet. So, you know, it carries the type of population that, you know, that cities do use rail compared to places that has places where it's only residential homes. So, you know, we don't really carry the population. And basically, residential home families has cars. So families that has cars, they're going to use their cars. So, mm-hmm. you know, basically, that's mainly my main reason why rail is not going to work. But I do have an alternative to relieve traffic, and that is to build a third city somewhere in central Oahu. And that would keep, I guess, if you build a city building or a state building in central Oahu, that would take care of a lot of government employees coming from the west side and north shore. And that would pretty much alleviate traffic, yeah, because government, there's not going to be a lot of government employees traveling into town. They're going to be traveling to central Oahu, not into town, and that would eliminate a lot of cars off the road. Mm-hmm. Don't you think so?
Yeah.
So, I think that's one way. And another reason why rail is not going to work is just look at the city ferries. If, you know, traffic is so bad, how come people didn't ride their city ferries?
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, it was a pilot project, and the city pretty much lost money for the pilot project. But if it was a real transportation mode, pretty sure the city would lost lots of money. But they used the city ferries. Nobody used the city ferries. And then what happened later on was that they replaced the city ferries with the super ferry because the super ferry didn't work between the neighbor islands. So they used the super ferry, and the super ferry didn't work. So I'm very afraid that when we do have the rail, lots of people not going to ride in. Basically, the city is going to go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my main reason why I'm against rail.
Okay. Well, thank you, Eddie. Anything else?
That's it.
All righty.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, thanks for joining and listening in. Aloha. Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
No, I think he makes a good point because I don't see any collection areas, you know, like in other cities, for instance, my mom lives on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge area that's covered, so the cars are even in the shade where the bus comes and collects the commuters in the morning and drops them off in the evening, and then they disperse from there to the individual residences in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any of this. So if I was to live in Eva, I got to walk to the train station for 30, 40 minutes. Forget it. I'm taking my car. I'm not going to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they going to collect the ridership?
Yeah.
You know, to stand up. And then, so we heard 21 stations. So is each station, what, 3 minutes? I mean,
the stop
how long is it going to take?
Right.
Stations and so on. So this seems like a long ride.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one thing, though, I do think the super ferry could work. They were shut down, but they were, weren't they working at capacity?
I don't know. But
at times they were.
They were.
Yeah. They, you know, unfortunate, they try to sneak it through, and good things can be introduced and shoved down your throat, and nobody will accept them. And that's unfortunate. Isn't it funny that these two major transportation projects are plagued with silliness? You know?
Right. But the Super 30, my understanding was it was actually running at capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of contractors and farmers were taking advantage of,
mm-hmm.
of it from Maui to Honolulu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to the Big Island. As a matter of fact, a lot of people invested money in the Big Island, anticipating that they could take their car now and go to their weekend home and just take a ferry ride, right?
Yeah. I'm puzzled, though, why our leaders, when there's something good with great potential, it's always shrouded and clouded with underhanded behavior and friendship and, you know, payoffs and what have you. That puzzles me. Good morning, caller. Come in a question. Hello? Anyway, yeah, that's what grabs me. These two good projects, I mean, the Super Ferry came in the wrong way. No environmental impact statements. It was wrong. And we didn't get a chance to really know its real value because it was introduced to us improperly and illegally. So guess what?
Well, we don't need no impact study, actually, if you think about the rail either.
Yeah.
Since we're living under this declaration of emergency.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how come they haven't revoked it yet?
Well, you know, I could say some very strong words about it, but I try to be polite to my guests because people can't discern. They'll say, "You were on the Carol Cox show when he was saying bad things about me, so you're just as guilty." But I'll leave it up to you to. They haven't done it because big money, and when guys boast that they bring home the bacon. They're not going to leave you to making bacon. They're going to want some of the bacon. And I think that's what's happening, the Abercrombie's. This was contrived, this whole process. And unfortunately, it's going to be the undoing of this city. I really believe that there, in nature, there's an ecosystem has a carrying capacity. And in politics and in communities and in cities, it has a carrying capacity of a tolerance level as to how much nonsense and crooked behavior will it tolerate, it can stand before it collapses on itself. And well, I think that's where we're headed.
Well, my biggest concern is we're starting something new that's humongous, mm-hmm. when the existing infrastructure is broken. It's completely broken. And by infrastructure, I don't mean just traffic.
Right.
I mean sewage and water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 3 days we're having the silt run out of an 8-inch pipe. They're trying to build something in Kakaako. I was always under the impression there was a no-fly zone. You couldn't build high over there because of the airport or the Kona winds or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know that they're going to build it higher than ever before. I don't know, is this part of Act 55 because they don't have to comply with the laws?
Well, that
when you're down there, Dave and Buster, that intersection mm-hmm. down there, you know, when you go towards Salamana Park, when it rains heavy, you can see the water coming out of the sewer,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's you know, mudding up the intersection. They're going to add all of these residential properties. Where's the water coming from? Where's the sewer going to go to? You know, we already mm-hmm. are not compliant when it comes to the sewer, and they just keep building and building and building, and they keep diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
The value of life of the people on this island.
Right.
I mean, there's no more quality mm-hmm. of life when it comes to that.
Yeah, it's eroding. I can say that in my observations. But as I say, the carrying capacity and the tolerance level is defined and dictated by things that consume and conflict. And eventually, I predict that the current pace that we're going, this city is going to be right in the same seat or standing next to Birmingham, Alabama. And but Parker, Brinkerhoff, they'll have lots of money. Actus Lend Lease will have lots of money. Neil Abercrombie will have his pensions and his retirement, and Senator Inouye will have his fame and glory and big bucks, and Hirano will have hers, and we'll all be sitting over here trying to figure out who did this to us. Well, we did it to ourselves when we go in and mark that ballot box. So if there's any search for who did it to you, I can help you. You do it to yourself. So start thinking about your voting and who and how you vote. So anyway, that's about it, Mike. Any other comments? Or
no, it's just the only thing is I got kids, and I just can't see, because of based upon the last 20 years how we've been going, I just don't see a future for them.
Mm-hmm.
It just that doesn't, or a quality of life as we have known it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, Hawaii is basically, well, not Hawaii, Honolulu. Well, like one caller once said, it's worse than Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's turning into cancer.
Yeah, it's gonna be bad. I predict, and the way things are going, and if we engage in another war, it's really gonna. I think we'll see some serious financial problems. But anyway, okay. Well, thank you, and we're gonna have to talk about fishing one day and how the fishing industry is being impacted. And real briefly, you mentioned last week that the carbon monoxide industry of fish is being impacted. Real quickly, can you give a little insight on
that? Well, it seems that some foreign governments stopped subsidizing the fuel,
mm-hmm.
so now they can't afford to go fishing anymore, which seems to have taken off a big chunk of imported carbon monoxide fish off the market.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese... And the Chinese Sea basically told everyone, look, besides the Japanese where there's a dispute, but like Vietnam and all the other nations, they told them, you know what, you stay out of our waters. This is our water, not yours.
Wow.
So a lot of other nations stopped importing.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's good for the consumer, and some of you are still eating the carbon monoxide fish. I've done what I could to try and educate you, so pokey up and... Helion.
Yep.
All righty. Well, thank you, Mike.
All right. You're welcome.
Aloha. And thank all of you listeners. It's just absolutely awesome. Give you an example. Things are happening, folks. People are coming. And so if you got ideas or want to express yourself, just last night, 2,700 visitors to download the Carol Cox Show on just last week's show. So we don't need big papers and big TV. All you need is a phone, and you can call in and share your thoughts and share your concerns, and we'll get it done. And that's why I like KWAI. And if any of you have the desire of putting a show on, contact the station, please. Contact me. There's room for everybody, and I encourage you, and it's affordable. So please give a call, and things will work out, and you'll be able to express yourself. Okay, see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.
President made the comments Sunday to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, saying his administration has been working hard in his time in office to pressure Iran.
I made a commitment to the American people and said that we would use all elements of American power to pressure Iran and prevent it from acquiring a nuclear weapon. And that is what we have done.
Reacting to the president's comments, Maryland Congressman C.A. Dutch Raffensperger tells CNN's State of the Union, no one should.